We are having ongoing internal discussions about how we can play the most effective role in supporting the large number of refugees who are coming out of Ukraine.
Reuniting Ukrainian families in the U.S. It's Wednesday, March 23rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, political asylum challenges, ending North Korea's isolation, pandemic wanes in India, Western U.S. water supplies worsen, high-tech fragrance creation. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Ukraine says it retook a strategically important suburb of Kyiv as Russian forces squeezed other areas near the capital and pressed their attack on the embattled southern port of Mariupol. But the Kremlin's ground offensive in other parts of the country advanced slowly or not at all, knocked back by lethal hit-and-run attacks by the Ukrainians. Meanwhile, Ukrainians with relatives in the United States are finding it challenging to reunite with them in a time of war. Human rights advocates are now pushing the Biden administration to expedite the process to reunite refugees with relatives in the U.S. VOA's Tatiana Vorosko and Alina Barros have the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
As the third week of Russia's invasion in Ukraine came to an end, more than 3 million people have left the country, nearly half of them children, according to UN data. While the majority have temporarily settled in Poland and other European countries, some are trying to reach relatives in the U.S.
For Ukrainians who have family here in the U.S., there is a system of family reunification under the Lautenberg program. It essentially allows those who have family here to apply and to reunify here in the U.S. For those who do not have a U.S. family tie, they still have access to the refugee resettlement system.
On March 11th, President Biden said the U.S. will, quote, welcome the Ukrainian refugees. We should welcome them here with open arms if they need access, end of quote. However, the refugee resettlement process can take years, and as of mid-March, the U.S. has only admitted a few hundred Ukrainian refugees. In response, the White House says they are discussing ways to streamline the process.
We are having ongoing internal discussions about how we can play the most effective role in supporting the large number of refugees who are coming out of Ukraine.
With nothing certain yet on the table, Krish O'Meara Vignaraja, CEO of the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service, says human rights activists have been pushing the administration to make the process easier and faster.
We have been calling for an expedite of those applications that are in the pipeline currently for families who are reuniting here in the U.S. They already have their paperwork submitted. We believe that they should be allowed to travel to the U.S. and to complete the application process while they're here.
Some have been tempted to apply for U.S. tourist visas, but that, say immigration lawyers, is a violation of the law. Applying for political asylum is also not an option for Ukrainian refugees, since they're not being persecuted by their government or their country, or a group of people in their country. What needs to be done instead is to go through the process of refugee resettlement or obtain humanitarian parole, which is a special permission granted to people seeking to enter the U.S. under emergency circumstances.
Obviously, the tourist visa is not engineered to respond to a humanitarian crisis. And so we believe that there are other systems, whether it's refugee resettlement, asylum, or humanitarian parole, which are the more proper pathways.
President Biden has set the refugee ceiling for this year at 125,000, saving some 10,000 slots for refugees coming from Europe and Central Asia, an area that includes Ukraine. But the White House says that number can be increased if needed. While the U.S. is not welcoming the large numbers of Ukrainian refugees, it is providing economic assistance to the countries that do, such as Poland and other European countries. VOA News, Washington.
Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Experts say herd immunity and vaccinations needed as COVID restrictions relaxed in Hong Kong. U.S. expands travel bans on Chinese officials for persecution. Report says Facebook fails to detect hate against Rohingya. Asians breathing world's most dangerous air. New Zealand suspends Antarctic patrol ship project, cites COVID budget impact. Find complete coverage on all these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Wednesday. Ukrainian and Russian citizens are descending on the Mexican border city of Tijuana to request political asylum in the United States. With Vicente Calderon in Tijuana, VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports that many Ukrainians are able to cross the border, while Russian citizens are having a harder time.
Dozens of Russians and Ukrainians camped out in recent days on the Mexican side of the border, both groups hoping to be admitted to the United States to claim asylum status. The Ukrainians are mostly gaining entry to file their claim. Following a U.S. Customs and Border Protection memo dated March 11th urging they be considered for exemptions to Title 42. That's a public health provision invoked by former President Donald Trump that makes it difficult for people to enter the United States to claim asylum. Trump cited the threat of COVID-19, but critics allege it was intended to curb the flood of asylum seekers from Central America and Haiti. The measure is still in force under President Joe Biden. There was no mention of Russians in the memo, however, although both groups at the border say they oppose Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. A Russian restaurant manager named Mark, who asks that his last name not be used, says he left his job and country over the war.
They're telling that they're trying to make Ukrainian people live better. I don't believe it. Bombing and destroying the buildings, I don't believe it. I don't believe no word that is said by the television.
A Russian from St. Petersburg, who was here with his wife and two children, says he cannot believe what is happening. Russian Evgeny Yarin.
War is a mass murder of people. Ukraine is defending its sovereignty now. But in any case, innocent civilians are dying in the 21st century. It shouldn't be happening these days. Because people shouldn't wage wars in the 21st century. People can do better.
Tijuana officials have been pleading with the Russian migrants to leave the crowded sidewalk near the border crossing while U.S. authorities consider their cases. Saturday, Tijuana's mayor said the migrants agreed and would be relocated to a hotel. The war weighs heavily on the minds of both Ukrainians and Russians. A Ukrainian software engineer wonders how far Russian President Putin will go. 26-year-old Ukrainian Krylo Sokolov.
I concern not only about nuclear weapon of Russia, I concern about nuclear station in Ukraine.
Russian soldiers in Ukraine have seized Zaporizhia, the largest nuclear power plant in Europe. Many Russians hoping to cross the border are long-term dissidents who came to Mexico as tourists while flights between Russia and much of Europe were being canceled. Anton, a university professor in Russia, says a dark fate awaits him, his wife, and others if they return.
It seems we are more like really political, I know, criminals in Russia, potentially, and it all depends on how long Putin's regime will live on.
Escaping a war with no end in sight, or a country that is increasingly intolerant of dissent, with people from both sides hoping for asylum. With Vicente Calderon in Tijuana, Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
Still to come on VOA Asia, why international isolation could worsen North Korea's human rights violations. Happening now in Asia, search and rescue workers have found mud-stained personal effects but no survivors among the wreckage of a China Eastern plane that crashed into a mountainside Tuesday with 132 people on board. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. A United Nations investigator is calling for an end to North Korea's international isolation, warning continued exclusion will prolong the country's worsening human rights violations. The UN Special Rapporteur on the situation in North Korea submitted his report to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN investigator Thomas Ojea Quintana says North Korea locked itself away from the rest of the world at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. He says this complete isolation has coincided with a new cycle of missile tests and tensions on the Korean Peninsula. He says he believes the ongoing deterioration of the country's human rights situation is linked to its ever-increasing isolation from the international community. He warns that a new cycle of escalation in tensions on the Korean Peninsula could rapidly and dangerously destabilize the region.
The current situation in Ukraine and other armed conflicts remind us of the devastation brought about by war. In my view, a diplomatic approach towards peace and decolonization of the Korean Peninsula, which builds upon previous negotiations and is combined with proactive engagement in the human situation, is the only way forward.
Quintana says the government's oppressive control of the population has tightened under the country's COVID-19 border shutdown and travel restrictions. He says the government of President Kim Jong-un has instituted many draconian measures, such as a system of arbitrary detention without fair trial guarantees, to maintain effective control of the population.
There is widespread fear of arbitrary arrest and mistreatment in detention, especially for those forcibly repatriated, including detention in Kwan Liso, the political prison camps. These political prison camps represent the worst excesses of a system of governance that systematically violates the human rights of its people.
Quintana says chronic food insecurity is widespread, affecting 41% of the country's population. He says malnutrition remains a leading cause of maternal and child mortality. He warns vulnerable populations may face acute hunger and starvation if the current situation persists. The UN experts pleads for the government to enact policies to improve the dire condition of its people fell on deaf ears. North Korea boycotted the meeting. It did not bother to respond. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The political party of outgoing Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte announced Tuesday it will back Ferdinand Marcos Jr. in the campaign to succeed Duterte. The endorsement from the LDP Laban Party will likely provide a further boost to the 64-year-old Marcos, the son and namesake of the Philippines' late dictator. He holds a commanding lead in the May 9th election. It is unclear if President Duterte will personally support Marcos. He is running alongside Duterte's daughter, Sarah. She also holds a commanding lead in her campaign for vice president. The president and vice president of the Pacific Archipelago are elected separately.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
News alert from VOA Asia. Japan's government called on citizens to conserve energy and warned of blackouts after last week's earthquake caused a serious power shortage. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. 2 years ago, India imposed the world's strictest lockdown, prompting an exodus of millions of migrant workers to villages. Now, as the pandemic wanes in the world's second worst hit country, many have returned to its megacities to resume their small businesses. For VOA, Anjana Pasricha visits markets in the Indian capital to find optimism that the worst may be behind.
These jostling crowds do not deter Mukta Kapoor from spending an afternoon shopping in a New Delhi market known to offer bargains.
Mentally, I feel free of the pressure to always wear a mask or keep a sanitizer in my hand. The constant worry that I should not touch anyone or change clothes when I return home has gone. It's good till it lasts.
The pre-pandemic buzz is back in markets as COVID-19 numbers plummet to a two-year low. India has reported about 2,000 daily new infections in recent days. It is bringing a wave of hope to thousands of shop owners and street vendors who were badly hit as the middle classes worked and shopped online. Now, a steady stream of customers check out Ashu Arfi's clothes.
When people come out of their homes and shop, it helps our economy. Earlier, people used to say, put on a mask, but no one bothers now. Customers also feel everything is becoming normal.
For 2 years, these migrant workers shuttled between their village homes and New Delhi amid lockdowns imposed during three COVID-19 waves. Even when businesses reopened, income plummeted.
When I went back to the beauty parlor, I used to sit idle the whole day last summer. Very few clients came. I felt everything had come to an end.
While India's economy is recovering, restoring livelihoods for the 80% who work in its vast informal sector poses a challenge. Economists say they were already coping with an economic slowdown when the pandemic worsened their plight.
The bottom 60% in India have lost incomes in the last 5 years, since 2015-16, and the top 20% have gained incomes. No other major economy has such a huge unorganized sector. You know, that's why you never saw this kind of mass migration from the cities to the rural areas in any other of the G20 countries.
But a waning pandemic has triggered optimism.
People no longer hesitate or ask me to wear gloves when I hand ice lollies to them. They accept it easily.
Within 3 or 4 months, business will grow and work will be good, I hope.
Whether that hope is fulfilled will depend on the course of the pandemic, which health experts warn is not over yet. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Making headlines in Asia, Human Rights Watch welcomed the declaration by the United States that Myanmar's violent repression of its Rohingya minority amounts to genocide, which officials for the rights organization say could generate greater support for legal moves against the government at the International Court of Justice in The Hague. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. 2 decades of drought in the western United States has pushed the nation's second largest reservoir to record lows. Lake Powell in the arid southwest is in danger of dropping too low for turbines in the reservoir's dam to produce electricity that helps power millions of homes. It's part of a worsening picture for water supplies in the American West linked to climate change. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
Arizona's Glen Canyon Dam delivers hydroelectric power to 5 million customers in 7 states. But that clean, renewable electricity is under threat. Water levels are dangerously low after more than 20 years of drought, says Jennifer Gimble, head of the Colorado Water Center at Colorado State University, via Skype.
A drought sounds like that means we'll get over it. We're not going to get over this. This is climate change in action.
The warming climate is making the arid American West even drier, and it's shrinking the most important water source in the West, the Colorado River, says water expert Michael Cohen with the Pacific Institute via Skype.
Without this water supply, this regular, dependable, secure water supply, the West would not have developed.
Cohen says major cities, including Las Vegas, Los Angeles, and San Diego, drink from the Colorado. It sustains about 40 million people in all, and it irrigates more than 2 million hectares of farmland.
So it's a multi-billion-dollar economic engine that is becoming less and less reliable. We thought this water was going to be here, and it's increasingly not.
Gimbel says water experts predicted that climate change would stress the river.
What we didn't see coming was how fast it was going to decline. And that's the alarm bells that are going off right now.
Arizona farmers took their first ever water supply cuts last year. Agriculture uses about 70% of the river's water. Farmers are under increasing pressure from growing cities that demand more water. It's a source of friction between urban and rural areas, Cohen says.
Cities would simply buy out a farming community's water supply and then take that water and say, we're creating more economic value with it in the city. But that doesn't make any difference if the people who are living in those rural communities and see their livelihood go away.
Many farms are getting more water efficient to lower their demands. Cities are also trying to make more efficient use of water, he says.
In many cities, despite tremendous economic and population growth, they're using less water than they did 20 and 30 years ago. So what we're seeing in a lot of these cities is this conservation ethic. So that's been a major shift.
But it's not enough. The reservoirs keep dropping, and weather forecasters predict another dry year. As climate change deepens and Western cities keep growing, experts say even bigger changes are needed, and soon. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA recently took another step on its path to sending humans back to the moon. The space agency, for the first time, rolled out its new moon rocket from the Kennedy Space Center's Vehicle Assembly Building to Launch Pad 39B. The new NASA Moonship, which includes its Space Launch System, or SLS, with the Orion spacecraft atop, was taken to the launch pad to prepare for the final test before the launch of the Artemis 1 unmanned mission to the moon. According to NASA, the SLS that will be used for its first Artemis mission will produce a maximum thrust of 39.1 meganewtons, 15% more thrust than the Saturn V rocket that took humans to the moon in the late 1960s and early 1970s. NASA says it will evaluate data from its final test before setting a specific launch date for its Artemis 1 launch. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Finally on VOA Asia, perfumers can spend months and sometimes even years developing and perfecting new fragrances. Some tech startups are betting on artificial intelligence to create unique custom blended scents in minutes. But will customers like what they smell? VOA's Tina Trin reports.
If the commercials are any indication, the world's most popular perfumes are less about the scent and more about the feelings they evoke. They're a whole mood.
Number 5, Chanel.
And these moods are often determined by a select few.
There's, you know, probably about 700 people deciding for the 7 billion how they should smell.
Anahita Mechanic is a scent designer and the co-founder of Every Human, the maker of Algorithmic Perfumery, a machine that combines user input and artificial intelligence.
It allows every human to create their custom scent based on who they are and how they feel in the moment.
But for such a subjective medium, will customers like what they smell? The process kicks off with an extensive personality and preferences questionnaire. Algorithms process the data and come up with 3 perfume formulations.
We also ask you to provide feedback. Did I like this one? Did it match me, etc.? And it's through that feedback loop that we're learning and that we're seeing, okay, this algorithm seems to be learning faster or predicting better.
Ooh, I like it. Nice.
Users can continue to adjust the formulations in the app, making new scents to suit their tastes. Malik Khan is a customer at the pop-up.
I think that's part of the whole fun of it, right? You get to just let your mind run free with it all and just see where it all takes you.
Every Human isn't the only company bringing technology to the world of fragrance. Ninu Perfume is a so-called smart fragrance bottle containing 3 interchangeable vials that allow for 100 different scent combinations. With an app, users can create new combinations on the spot, adjusting for various settings and moods.
When it comes to something, again, as personal as scent, you know best what you like. You don't need to be professionally trained to know that I don't like this, and I do like this.
And technology may just be able to lend a helping spritz. Tina Trin, VOA News.
That's all for VOA Asia. Find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at VOAnews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Cascio in Washington. Bye now.